some new business, some old business.
Quickener's debt.
Does that have to be any testimony? All they supposed to be heard, I believe. Twenty?
I'm ready for 126, I need 126.
Petula will be here, Senator Petula will be here shortly.
Mr. Chairman, 126.
Senator Figgs, how are you, Senator Crockett?
126 could go out.
No, we can't.
We'll take up, Senate Bill 126.
Thank you.
Randy Burns? I'm ready to dispose of this one. I believe this is the Dennis bill, right?
Right, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Would you care to comment upon the substitute?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just have...
On J?
Right. I just had a couple of comments based on the testimony that you took on Monday regarding this bill, and I wanted to just mention those. One of the issues that's been a difficulty over the issue of credentialing with the dental board has been the question of what constitutes meeting the criteria that has been established, typically when it says the language in on page one of the bill, lines 25 through 28, which is not being really affected by the legislation, but says has been licensed to practice dentistry in another territory, region, etc., with licensing requirements at least equivalent in scope, quality, and difficulty to those of this state. And what has happened in the past, and this is what many of the doctors were testifying about when they get into the issue of having to present case studies, is that in order to evaluate the exam and to evaluate whether or not it was similar in nature, they asked them to come forward with clinical studies and case histories of patients that they had performed work on. And that's where we get into the issue of using slides, which they view as sort of not a very good representation of the quality of the work. And it's been one of the sore points and one of the issues about whether or not this bill should have a fiscal note, which is how much time is the board going to spend in evaluation of every application that comes to them over the credentialing issue. And I just want to clarify that that's where some of the heat comes from, is in trying to determine whether or not this person meets the qualifications that are, in a sense, equivalent to those that other persons who took the exam met. And that's the reason they go through, or have in the past, required a substantial presentation. I don't think that that's necessarily what needs to be done, but that's what the board has done in the past. That brings me to my second point, which is, as you know, the department has taken a neutral position on this bill, but I wanted to clarify one of our beliefs, and that is that if this is imposed on the board, and the word on line 18, changing the word from may to shall, I think is going to have a fairly negative consequence on the board, and because I don't think at this point in time that the board itself is supportive of the credentialing. And it's like anything else, when you impose something on an entity, whether or not there may be good reasons for it, they can tend to be somewhat obstreperous. And I do believe that imposing or forcing this board to go into the credentialing may well, sort in a sense, force them into a position which some people might find difficult, which is they might make them go through a lot of hoops to get credentialed, including case presentations, slide presentations, and all those kinds of things. So one of our points has been, and in our position paper we mentioned it, and that is if the board itself could reach the conclusion that credentialing was in the best interest of the state without having it imposed on them, there might be more of a willingness then, if they do that, to go about through regulation creating a less onerous system for admission by credentialing than I think you might get if it's imposed on them. And so that's one of our positions, is that I'm just concerned about what they may do in reaction, and obviously they'll still have a great deal of latitude about how they can take these credentialing individuals, and I think that they might tend to make it more difficult than necessary as a result. The governor's office is in the process of making a series of appointments. I think there are three positions open, or he just made one appointment of a public member, and there's a dental hygienist position and another dental position. So one of our feelings is that we might want to wait and see what happens as a result of the governor's appointments and whether or not that changes the balance on the board itself in favor of credentialing. Because if the board itself is in that role, it might handle how you go about getting credentialed, may choose to go ahead and allow for credentialing, and might go about it in a fairly rational way. So while those are all sort of subjective comments, I thought it was important that we put those on the record, because I do think how the board decides to go about allowing for credentialing, even if you impose it through a shall, will have a lot to do. And you may have Dennis back here in a year saying, look, you forced them to do this, but they're putting us through this many hoops, and this really isn't what we thought you intended. As for the proposed changes, I don't think we, assuming that you are supporting credentialing, the bill seems fine, and we have no problem with a new section, which is section 1 of the bill, lines 8 through 16. And I just want to make those comments for the record.
Thank you.
It would seem to me, Mr. Chairman, that one of the policy-making structures of our constitutional system is the legislative process to direct and to set the policy. And it would seem to me that what we're doing here is that we're saying that as long as they're in the posture of doing it by examinations in this method, why they shall take the Dental American Dental Association. And if it's May, why then the whole bill is moot, really.
May, we should just send them a postcard and forget about it.
Yeah,
and I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, I am opposed to the shall. What you have here is the legislature cannot get in there and determine who's qualified and who isn't qualified to practice dentistry in the state. That's why we have a dental board. That's why we have professional boards and commissions to police their own and to license their own and this kind of thing. Because the legislature doesn't have that ability. I think the amendment in the CS Part E up there at the top is a very good addition to the bill, and I would support that. But I can't see why this committee would want to delegate or mandate or dictate some sort of licensing procedure to the dental board when they're opposed to it. They have the expertise. They understand what's going on there. We have a very controversial point of view here. Why play into that? Why not let the board proceed? There was another amendment that I wanted to add. I didn't know this bill was coming up today, and I haven't seen the CS before today. So at best, I would like to be able to at least hold it one day to be able to read it and look at it, Mr. Chairman. But talking to one of the military dentists up in Anchorage when we had the budget hearings up there, the military dentists who actually practice every year get evaluated. And there's by their supervisors, and they get a clinical evaluation on their performance.
Matter of fact, we had a teleconference when you were gone. We spent 2.5 hours listening to this. I'm sorry you missed, because they went in detail. They sent all the information down. We went through it in detail. And I have a feeling that there's a lot of support out there for this approach, that even people on the board support it. Some dentists have been involved in this for over a period of a long time, many years, said this is a good approach. It's about time to start doing it. Everyone else is starting to do it, this user's approach. And I think you're right when you say that, or you said that they're responsible to do these things. They set their own criteria. Well, sometimes they set that criteria so close that nobody qualifies, and that's a human thing to do. That is the problem out there.
Just for the record, I think we're making a great mistake. I really do. I think the pendulum, we're just adhering to a certain deal.
We'll hold the bill one more meeting for your amendments, and then we'll dispose of it one way or the other.
Thank you.
Okay. Which one? You've heard these two on top already, haven't you? Which one? You heard one was this?
45, 56, 58, and 134. These are the ones that we heard.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, those are the ones that are. Some of them CSs have been adopted. Others the CS must be adopted, but it was her.
Okay.
We'll pick up Senate Bill. Number 45. Is anyone here for Senator Pierce's office?
Yes, Senator Ross. CS was adopted. All we have to do is move the bill. No,
the record, my name is Joe Fennity, staff person to Senator Pierce. And after discussion with Mr. Link and with Senator Pierce, another CS was prepared this morning.
Chairman, Senator, is that E? So that we
got, yes, sir.
So we got so many of them. If it's E, why then we're on the same wavelength.
Yes, it is E. And it incorporates the amendments that Mr. Link had proposed on behalf of Department of Administration at our last meeting. I worked with Senator Pierce this morning on this, and she concurs with those amendments.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pierce?
Are you ready for a motion for the CS?
This is a consensus between Senator Pierce's office and Mr. Link.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes, sir. And just for the record, each amendment was discussed and had a public hearing on it in the last meeting that we had that you were not here at. I would move we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 45, Labor and Commerce, dated 3/22/89.
Any objections?
No.
Are you ready for a motion,
yes,
sir? I would move that we move out CS for Senate Bill 45, Labor and Commerce, with individual recommendations.
Any objections?
Yes, thank you. Do we have a fiscal note with it?
Not on the new CS, Senator.
Okay. Not on the new CS.
No, sir. Not the one that was prepared this morning.
Could we have one?
Can we have one?
As quickly as possible.
Yes.
Catch up.
Mr. Lincoln is shaking his head, yes.
It goes next to State Affairs. So.
Yes, sir.
Senate Bill 56. Senator Kelly. Dave, you want to testify, Mr. Kelly? We had a hearing on this last week, also, right?
The amendment was adopted, and all the others moved the bill.
Okay, fine.
This is H.
Dave?
For the record, my name is Dave Gray, staff with Senator Kelly, and that I don't know if the committee wants to go ask me any questions, that there was elaborate discussion on it. For the chairman's information, we did add an amendment and discussed it that's in this latest committee substitute, which brings the preferences into conformance with how the feds give a preference.
Mm-hmm. Right,
Mr. Chairman.
For the Senator,
for the record, the committee substitute we're looking at is 320 H.
Right.
But you've got to be careful because 316 was also an H.
Does Senator Kelly concur with the committee substitute?
Yes.
That's a good amendment, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, right. Any questions? Thank you. Senator Coghill?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 56, Labor and Commerce, dated 3/20, move from the committee with individual recommendation.
We better adopt it.
We did, didn't we? Oh, okay. To adopt it.
We adopt it?
Coghill, we better do that.
I would recommend my motion. Was the committee substitute adopted?
The amendment was adopted. CS as itself was not
adopted. So we need to go. I move and ask that I withdraw my previous motion, Mr. Chairman. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 56, Labor and Commerce, dated 3/20, be adopted.
Any objections? Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for Senate Bill 56, Labor and Commerce, 3/20, move from the committee with individual recommendation.
Any objections? Motion carried.
Yes.
Senate Bill 58. Senator Fakes.
Yes, sir. You have before you a CS dated 3/1/89. What the department's going to do is they've got a bill in on the House side, I guess, that they're going to put in general partner. That will still eliminate some Alaskans that have traditionally been involved in the state procurement code and being involved as an Alaska bidder with the Alaska preference. This bill is a little broader than that, and then it says at least one of the partners is a resident. And that's the way I think I want to go. It catches most of the Alaskans that were in
the process prior to the procurement code where it said all of the partners are residents. It still allows corporations the big loophole to participate. It is going to still restrict some Alaskans, but not as many as the administration's general partner language would.
Questions?
Senator Coggio.
Chairman, through the chair, the good senator, I've got a copy here that, as compared where we had the original, was 50% of the partners.
Yes, sir.
And now what we're doing is we're relaxing it to say that if one partner is a resident, that's suffice.
Right, sir. And what the problem is, or if there is a problem, or what you may feel is too relaxing, is that we do not define partner here. We do not talk about a limited partner or a general partner. The administration, I believe, is going to put in a bill, or has put in a bill on the House side, to define it as a general partner. If you do that, you will be eliminating some Alaskans that participated. Okay, so that's why I've chosen to go, if you wish, the more liberal approach or the broader approach, to try to catch those Alaskans who really do belong in this procurement code.
No problem, Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Biggs?
I would move we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 58, dated 3-189.
Any objections? Carried.
And I would move we move CS for Senate Bill 58 from committee with individual recommendations.
Labor comment.
Unanimous consent? Any objections? So ordered.
All right, we're rolling.
Did we take a back of the chair last time, too?
Yes, sir.
There's three of them.
Which one are we on? Senate Bill number 134. Senator Duncan, is come forward, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mike Young from Senator Duncan's staff. We introduced a committee substitute that will correct some discrepancies with insurance. We had changed the bill in Hess, and by changing an earlier section and not changing a later section, we had an inconsistency, and the committee substitute, which we introduced here on Friday, corrected that inconsistency.
That's the one that's before the committee here?
You haven't adopted it, sir.
The one we're looking at. Questions, Senator Coggio? You were here at the last meeting.
What we changed from Hess on it, Chairman, through the Chairman. What did we change on this from the Hess copy?
We wanted to make sure, in Hess we changed to make sure that the provision of insurance was optional, and we strengthened that to make sure that no one could construe it as requiring either Aetna or any private insurance company to be mandated to provide insurance. It's entirely optional.
We have the Hess committee substitute. Now we have a new committee substitute in front of us. Do you have this with you?
Yes, sir. Page 9.
And it's on page 9.
Yes, sir. In section 11. We took out the section 08 and 080 that specified, that said health insurance providers may offer insurance, and we took out that section completely and incorporated that language in section 11.
You referred to 0880.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was my understanding in the original bill it would have allowed the acupuncturist to collect insurance. It would have been put on the schedule. In this CS, they are taken out of the schedule, and there's no mandatory requirement for acupuncturists to be paid through Aetna or the state medical insurance. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, ma'am. That is correct.
Okay. So in order for them to get on the list, a new piece of legislation would have to be put through, or this would have to be amended to allow that.
Through the chair, the way that I understand it, ma'am, and I have to admit that this insurance stuff kind of boggles me, we have left it optional, and the insurance companies can provide insurance without us changing the law, but it's entirely at their option. If Aetna decides that, say, they would like to cover acupuncture because it could save them money on chiropractic, and also acupuncture is widely recognized as a very good means of detoxifying people from alcohol and drug abuse. If the insurance company elected to recognize this treatment, they could do so, and it could save them money. But we wanted, and I have worked with Jerry Reinwan and Gordon Evans. Jerry works for Blue Cross, and Gordon is with Aetna. And I talked to both of them about this. We wanted it to be entirely at their option, not mandating them. Senator Duncan's very concerned about the health care issue, as I'm sure we all are. And we didn't want to be in a position of doing anything that would make that go up.
Yeah. In the law, there's a schedule of payments that can be repaid under Medicaid dollars. Is this putting acupuncturists on that schedule?
The way I understand it, Senator Fakes, it's optional. There's no one here from insurance. If you might need someone that's more expert than me to really be sure about that. The way it explained to me, it is not.
Well, that's my understanding too, but I'm trying to make a record here and just make sure that is indeed the case. I mean, that's what I understood in the last public hearing of the bill, but the language is not easy to understand with all the reference numbers, and so I was just hoping that maybe you could clarify it for the record.
Through the chair, I had the drafter, Terry Lauterbach, talked to Jim Jordan of the Division of Insurance, and I had talked with both of them and explained exactly what we wanted, and then I had them talk to each other. As far as I can understand, that we have accomplished that goal. This is kind of confusing stuff.
Is that good enough for the record?
There are specific statutory language that have to be in this bill that you would be adding and underlining it, and that section is not in this bill at all, so I don't think we have that problem.
Thank you. Further questions? Okay, we're ready.
Mr. Chairman, I move we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 134, dated 3/17/89.
Ask unanimous consent.
Any
objections? Okay, passed.
I would move that we pass CS for Senate Bill 134, Labor and Commerce, with committee from committee with individual recommendations.
Ask unanimous consent.
Any
objections? Carried.
Thank you.
Thanks. Senate Bill 92.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Brown, Division of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety. At your pleasure here, as far as whether or not you want to itemize section by section again, which we did Monday, or if you have specific questions on the bill, whichever.
Senator Fakes.
I think the problem before, Mr. Chairman, was the fiscal notes. It looked to us like commerce was not getting a fair shot for public safety. It was my understanding you guys were going to go back and discuss the fiscal notes between you and either decide to transfer the fair amount of money over or something. Has that been done?
Mr. Chairman, basically there's two different fiscal notes in here. We are transferring what we feel it costs us to operate the program, which definitely is less than the cost that the occupational licensing indicates it would cost them to operate the program. The amendment that was made in Senate State Affairs to address that was basically the fees would be set by regulation so that it would be cost effective. If you look at the two fiscal notes now, it's indicating that it would cost the state about $2,600 to operate the program, with changing it from public safety to commerce and economic development. And the way you come to that, of course, is in general funds there, it indicates in fiscal year 91 it'd be $5,600. We are transferring $3,000 out of our budget, so the difference would be $2,600.
Issuing will still be done by the department, by the public safety.
That is correct.
And also, so it's kind of just splitting off a part of the process, right?
Mr. Chairman, this only transfers the licensing of motor vehicle dealers to sell vehicles. Yeah. Nothing to do with license plates or driver's license.
Okay. All right. Motion, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Claudio.
Yes, please. Move and ask unanimous consent that the committee 72 for Senate Bill 92, State Affairs, move from Labor and Commerce with individual recommendation.
Yes, ma'am, consent.
Ask unanimous consent.
Any objections?
Carried.
Thanks, Bill. Well. Looks like they make a real interesting bill out of this. Where's my little Tennessee bill?
Which one are we talking about?
We've already passed that.
It was a different bill.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
But it didn't get anywhere.
But
so
there's a
put it on this one.
This one's already been taken care of in that Christmas tree bill that's up in finance. Let's just hold this.
Senator Catula,
can I speak to this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I agree with Senator Cosgrove.
I'm Mark Weaver on behalf of Senator Catula. The statutes that relate to the Alaska Power Authority require a specific authorization before any design or construction work could be undertaken. This Bill 220 would provide that authorization but would not resolve the question of whether construction should be funded or not. Nor, obviously, would it resolve the question of whether, even if funding were available, whether the power authority would proceed to go ahead with the project. In the event that the Senate Finance Committee and ultimately the Senate approved funding for this project, the power authority would have no legal ability to proceed with the project unless they had a specific grant of authority such as that, which would be given with this bill. In other words, funding alone doesn't permit the project to proceed. There has to be, by statute, there has to be a specific act of authorization. This is like a permit.
What was that bill we passed out of committee here a couple of weeks ago? Didn't that have authorization?
As I understand it, that was appropriating dollars, but it did not provide authorization. It would seem that you need both, and perhaps the place to fight out whether it's going to happen or not, or at least whether the power authority is going to be given the opportunity to proceed would be in the Finance Committee.
Senator Fakes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, AS 4483-185 sets out 15 steps. How many?
That's the authorization requirement. 15 steps or 21 steps, that's APA's policy.
But there are steps in law that you have to go through to fund a project through the APA. And I guess my point is here, there are other things to worry about besides just this bill.
I plan on asking the subcommittee so that we can study it, Mr. Chairman. And if we're going to start talking about the Railroad Energy Fund, I think that we ought to put the whole scope in it again, send it to Finance Committee. But if this is a, if Mark is right on an authorization authority, why then we ought to authorize the authority that we sent up.
I think I'd agree with you on that. If we did send one bill which provided the funding, appropriations, and this is authorization for only part of it, this isn't complete.
Be happy to work on it if you want me to.
Well, let's hear from, is there any further questions from? Yes, before, please.
Chairman, I'm Dave Hutchins with the Alaska Rural Electric Co-op Association, and Mr. Weaver is quite correct that for a project to be built by the Alaska Power Authority as a project of the authority, it takes this kind of authorization. These were the only items in the Senate Bill 130 that this committee dealt with earlier where an authorization would be required. The other projects contained in it, like the $15 million, I believe it was, for Seward and money for Tenneke and so on, all of these other projects would be grants that did not go through the APA reconnaissance, feasibility, and authorization process. And so we would strongly urge that the authorization bill be advanced to finance where it can be considered, where they'll have the tools in front of them whenever they... And if they decide to proceed with the Rail Belt Energy Fund appropriations, they'll have the authorization to go with it. It is required.
Chairman?
Senator Coggio.
Dave, is this the only one that needs authorization? What about the northern tie?
The northern.
What about the willow tie?
The northern intertie is in here, Senator. Section 1 is the authorization between for the line between Anchorage and the Kenai Peninsula, and Section 2 is the authorization going north.
What, Mr. Chairman? What are that's the two interties. What about the other projects that are going to be administered by APA that are out of that fund that we were talking about, though the power line. Upgrade along the highway. Where's the southern tie, the Willow tie between Willow and
The Willow line, Mr. Chairman. It's a matter of drafting style here. In Section 2, it says from Anchorage to Fairbanks, but it's really from Wasilla to Willow and from Healy to Fairbanks. It's really two different segments, but. It's been the way the drafter put this together. It did not break it out into two units like that, but this would encompass both those segments between Anchorage and Fairbanks, getting the transmission capacity up to the 345 kV. In regards to the smaller projects that were administered through the Power Authority, those were pass-through grants, not projects of the Power Authority, and they did not require the authorization by statute to proceed. This would in no way preclude the projects from going forward that were otherwise in the appropriations bill.
Tell me something then, if in fact the Finance Committee decides to fund Anchorage to Kenai Peninsula, Section 1, they'd introduce a bill to do it then? Or could they amend the bill they have up there and make the authorization of the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chairman, the bill that this committee has already considered and sent to them, Senate Bill 130, provides for the appropriation.
Right.
And this is the bill that would provide for the authorization.
Senator Fakes.
Yes, sir. I have the general provisions, Article 6, for all projects that have to go through the Power Authority in Section 177 is a reconnaissance study. Have these two lines had their reconnaissance study completed?
Yes. They're way past reconnaissance level.
Okay. Has the review of the reconnaissance study been done by the Office of Management and Budget?
No, it has not.
Okay. So that's Section 179 that hasn't been completed. Section 181, feasibility study and finance plan. Has that been completed and analyzed?
The... feasibility study report is due for release on April 7th.
Is that by the Power Authority or by the Office of Management and Budget?
Power Authority.
Okay. That's Section 181. So the Power Authority has yet to do that. Section 183, Mr. Chairman, is a review of the feasibility studies and plans of finance by the Office of Management and Budget. There's a report required there. Then we get to Section 185, which is this bill, which is the submission to the legislature for authority. Then they have to, they go through project construction, annual audit, limitations on insurance, et cetera, et cetera. So here's the section. There's several hoops to jump through. And so you've got a feasibility study and a finance plan by the Power Authority that's not out yet, and then the feasibility study and the plan of finance for the Office of Management and Budget that's not out yet.
Would you comment on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the Senator is quite correct. The problem is that the feasibility study from the Power Authority requested by the legislature 2 years ago is just now nearing completion and will be reported out on April 7th. And then I think there's a 60-day period, and perhaps it's longer than that, in which the OMB has to consider that before it makes its report. And certainly that would get us way beyond the end of the legislative session. And in that case, it would not be possible to proceed with these interties if the legislature wanted to, if you waited for the OMB review of the feasibility study from the Power Authority.
But isn't that required? Is that required by law?
Yes, sir.
That is the normal procedure, but that has not always been the procedure that was followed. It was not followed, for example, in the Bradley Lake project. Similar system to this, the legislature did in fact adopt an authorization for the Bradley Lake project before OMB had done its review of the feasibility study from the Power Authority.
So, Mr. Chairman, says the authority may not proceed with work on the engineering or design phase of a proposed new project for which legislative approval is required until legislature approves the proposed new project. So that's what they're talking about. So what this bill would do would authorize these two transmission lines without the feasibility studies being done, without the plan of finance being done by both, the reconnaissance studies have been done, but the plan of finance has not been done by the Power Authority yet. It's almost done, but then OMB has to analyze it. And then what the legislature is supposed to have is the report of the finances and the economic feasibility before us, before then we jump to Section 185, which is authorizing the project. So if we pass this bill out, we are in fact authorizing the projects before the other two steps are done in the system. What they can do, though, is they can design, go out for design phase of a project if they have to meet the necessary requirements of FERC. They can do that work without legislative authority, but they cannot proceed with any engineering without our express authority on these subjects.
Sure.
Senator
Coghill.
Do you consider either one of these power line as old projects that are upgraded? Even the Anchorage Kenai is a transmission line. Is it an upgrade, or would you buy out Chugach and realign it on most of their right of way, or would it be a whole new project in a whole new area?
Mr. Chairman, the Kenai Peninsula line would be a whole new transmission line, which would be an additional circuit connecting Anchorage with the Kenai Peninsula.
So there'd be two transmission lines.
We spent money three
That's
times
correct.
Already this year.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we take and that we redo Section 2 so that we have it in conformance with all of the other references that we've had to the northern intertie, where we spell out the two different interties, because I'm a little bit uneasy about it being the way it is.
See, did we set the criteria on how to handle these programs after that Susitna fiasco?
Yeah.
And we found out we were really in a mess, and we finally laid out certain steps to take in order to keep a handle on what was going on. Now you're suggesting that we short-stop that process to go forward before we get the information on the projects?
Mr. Chairman, I think that the Section 185 was already in the statute at the time the Susitna project was under consideration. But there was a separate statute relating specifically to Susitna, as I recall, that apparently the Susitna project appeared to be under both the special Susitna statute and the Section 185 procedure as well. In response to comment that the Senator Fakes made a moment ago about the plan of finance, The plan of finance on this would be extremely simple in that the plan is state appropriations. It's not a matter of an intense study on bond feasibility and so on. The plan for this is simply to finance it with appropriated funds. And the Section 185 procedure here is not clearly applicable to the transmission lines, because when it was written back in the early 80s, it was intended to apply primarily to power generation projects, with hydro being the presumed kind of power generation that it contemplated. And when it talks about going to for a FERC license, for example, that doesn't apply to this kind of a project. And so the reference there is kind of spurious.
Just for the record, just to clarify, the Section 185 was amended in 1983 when the Office of Management and Budget was put in and the financial requirements were put in Sections 183 and 181. Actually, this Section 185 was amended in 1980, 82, and twice in 83 in both Chapter 28 and Chapter 7. So it's had an enormous amount of work. The Section 186, I think, is the section you're referring to, that the legislature was to sit and could just authorize the project. That was totally repealed when this was put in. So I think the chairman is right that a lot of these requirements were put in to prevent the same kinds of things that happened in Susitna. Even though I'm supporting Susitna, still do support Susitna, this section was all reworked at the urging, I believe, of Governor Sheffield and his power authority people to ensure that that couldn't happen again, so that there was an orderly plan of development. And transmission lines are included in that. I think I will find the exact amount. But 186, which you're referring to, was repealed in this.
That's correct.
Didn't get any response on Dave. Do you think it would be a good idea, drafting-wise, we've always said the Northern Intertie, Keeley Fairbanks, and the Anchorage Willow, or that I would be more comfortable if we had all of that in there so that one of those don't drop out. Now, let me ask you another question, if you can answer that one along with. What about the cogeneration plant? Would that be a grant, or would that be in part of an APA private interface?
Mr. Chairman,
would that be a need to be in there?
To deal with the first question first, it would be a very simple matter to amend Section 2 to provide the two segments that are contemplated. Wasilla to Willow and Healy to Fairbanks, and I think that'd be appropriate to spell it out specifically like that. In regard to the second question, the money for the cogeneration plant, coal plant at Healy, as I understand it, would be a grant of some sort. I understand there was legislation introduced on the House side today to deal with that, but I haven't seen it yet. If it were to be developed as a project of the Power Authority, there would have to be an authorization like this. If it were a grant to some other entity, it would not require this kind of authorization.
It gets a little empty there.
Is anyone else? Senator Fakes?
Well, sir, I was just reading about the feasibility study and the finance plan that is required in statute in Section 181, and it does include information about the proposed project, including but not limited to estimates of total project construction costs, total project operating costs, the cost of transmission systems, and reserve power requirements, etc. It goes on and on and on for a whole page.
Is the EPA here today?
They're in Zurich, Germany.
Zurich, Switzerland.
Or Switzerland, I mean, Germany. Munich.
Munich, Switzerland?
Sure.
What's
Munich do?
What's the committee want to do?
I'd like to hold it, amend the Section 2 to make it more clear, to make it clearer so that it reflects the language that we've been using for the last two or three years on Intertie.
Any problem with that?
No, sir.
Okay, we'll do that. Bring it up again Monday.